Welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordics podcast. At Evolution, we're committed to helping people and Nordics tech organisations realise their potential. Our goal is to develop deep relationships with individuals, building trust to make doing business easier. I'm Georgia Benton from Evolution Recruitment Solutions, and today I'm your host. Today I'm joined by Annika Widner, who's a product owner at SVT Play. I have Irina Bilus, who's a senior product manager at Diet Doctor. And I have Josephine Person, who's a scrum master and product owner at Tieto Every Banking, to discuss breaking barriers, women in code. Join us as we celebrate the achievements and challenges of women in the tech industry while delving into a diverse array of topics beyond the usual gender lens. Let's redefine the narrative of women in tech podcasts. Before we delve deeper into the topic, let's work our way around the room with some introductions. I'd love to know who you are, what you do, and what your biggest passion is currently. Annika, do you want to kick us off?
Yes, I'm Annika Widner. I work at SVT. I worked there for about 10 years, and I'm really passionate about this job. I think it is the best job I've ever had. It really combines my interest of film and communication and doing something meaningful for people. So I'm the product owner of a team there that is sort of responsible for player experience. So the viewing experience, like, what is it? Our goal is that people should really feel the viewing experience is excellent, and that you can do like the settings you want to do, and so you can really enjoy the content. So yeah, that's me, what I do.
Amazing, thank you so much. And Irina, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Of course, I can take it the next step. Yeah, so my name is Irina, and yeah, I work the product manager in Diet Doctor. Basically, my background is I started my career from the backend development, and I moved to the product development for last 8 years. Former business owner of a dev game dev studio. Last 1.5 year, I started my life from scratch in Sweden. Sweden was very welcoming to me, and super grateful for that. And it was an amazing journey to start working with the Diet Doctor. And in Diet Doctor, what we do is, and what is kind of my role is there, is that Diet Doctor, we have two products, which is a Diet Doctor application and Hava application. I work directly with the new Hava product, which help people to track their nutritions, to track what they eat, and with the new satiety per calorie approach, where we give up on all numbers. You basically need to be like a well-trained nutritionist scientist to make a proper choices in the supermarket and learn all this, like numbers, what is protein, what's this, what those. With the satiety approach, you are care only about one satiety score, where we with the long complicated algorithm just combine all together and basically highlight the quality of the food. So if you eat foods with less satiety in projection, you crave more foods, more sugar, more fat. If you eat foods with bigger satiety score, in projection, you crave less, you're more fulfilling, you have a really great protein intake, and you feel good. Yes, so this is what we're doing, trying to a little bit sum up all diets and all of these crazy numbers into one simple thing. That's all, I think.
Nice. Thank you so much for sharing. And we have Josephine Person, who is a team manager at Tieto Every Banking, currently working with Lance Vorsupringer. Do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Of course, yes. So I'm Josephine. I've been working with system development for about 5 years now. I've tried a few different roles during these years, everything from development, test management, project management, and being a scrum master. And now today I'm combining a team manager role at Tieto Every Banking with being a product owner for Länsförsäkringar, one of the largest bank and insurance companies in Sweden. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you all for sharing a little bit of context to each of you.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Let's move on to the topic in focus. So you've all come up with questions to ask each other about kind of being women in the tech industry. As usual, I'll work around the room and pose your questions, but I'd love you to give me the reasons behind it, and each of you will have the opportunity to give your take on the situation too. So let's start with Irina. I have your question here, which is, why did you get into tech, and what was your mindset and motivation at the time? Give me a little bit of context behind this.
Yeah, this topic always is so interesting for me, because I think I had my own way to view that stuff. So basically, when I was a kid, I was had quite a lot of sickness, and I spent a lot of time in hospitals, etc. So I always thought that I was a brave kid, and I always thought that, you know what, when I will be adult, I will become a surgeon. Because I really loved to feel like I would have a possibility to fix people, to find solutions to the problems. It was so incredible for me. Back at that time, when I was in the 7th, 8th grade, it was just in East Europe, I think it was the thing, to become a surgeon, you need kind of to be a man. Sorry to say that, but it was kind of not officially forbidden, but it was really, really hard, almost impossible to get there. And plus, you need to have a lot of money. So we were very poor family, but I was a smart kid. But it is, and at the same time, I was like all or nothing, surgeon or nothing. So, but at the same time, I met amazing programming teacher in our school. She was really amazing. She teaches us a lot. It was a Delphi. That's my first programming language. And when I just created the first, she always explained material in such an interesting way. So when I just tried my first some program which I developed, I was like, damn, it actually fits my purpose. With this, I can not only fix stuff, of course we will fix in the future a lot of stuff, but with this we can actually create stuff, create something new. It's even kind of better. So with this kind of mindset that I can bring new solution and create something, it perfectly fit the surgeon dream. So perfect, I will be developer, I will create stuff. So after this, what drives me all this time, and even this kind of even more helped me to switch from development to the product, because you kind of have even a more holistic view and try to find even more solution to the problem and hit this user needs and user pain points. This is my background and why I'm so curious about this topic. So what about you guys, girls?
Yeah, tell us about your kind of experiences. Anika, I saw you were going to go.
Yeah, I was actually starting off as a really a person really interested in language. I worked at a sort of pair in Switzerland before I started studying. And I came back from there I want to do something with language and communication. So I studied that. It's called Informationslinjen. So you're supposed to work for a company and sort of present their views in a good way. But I sort of didn't really fit in there. I was more interested in how people behaved and how they took in information. And that side of it was really interesting to me. And then I wasn't really interested in tech, but I happened to apply to a job that was technical writer, because I like to write. And when I wrote those manuals for a logistic company, it was so, so hard to describe this system that I was trying to write about. It was it's impossible. It doesn't even work. So I sort of became interested in how do you make good systems that is actually possible to explain to someone. And at the time, UX was really new in Sweden. This was like 1996, I think. And some people at the company had been in the US learning about, it was then called användbarhet or usability. And I thought that was really interesting. So it sort of, I sort of slided into that, went to a conference in Los Angeles, and I was hooked. I really loved it. And I was like, I didn't know that I would work in tech, but this way I can sort of combine making something good for people, trying to understand people, getting to talk to a lot of people and see them do things. It really like fit me well. So I worked with UX for a long time, also at SVT. And that's really like, I still have it in me a lot. Like when I am a product owner as well, I really care about how people view and use our product. And it really helps me, I think, to prioritize also. So I wasn't a tech person, but I sort of, I really see it also as you, Irina, as a way of creating good change in the world.
Amazing, amazing. And what are your thoughts, Josephine?
Yeah, I think I can really relate to Irina's feeling of like getting quick results and a quick feedback on what you are creating. I think that was really what pushed me into the tech side of business. I studied a Master of Science in Engineering Mathematics, and it was really theoretical and the pace was quite slow. It was a long feedback loop until you understood whether you had gotten the answers right or wrong. So when I started applying for my first job, I really looked for opportunities that allowed me to have both a really steep learning curve so I could continue learning even after university, but also to get this quicker and more visible results compared to how it was during the studies. And that is how I got into tech and into system development. I was really amazed as well by the results that you can get so quickly within front-end development, especially.
Amazing. Perfect. Well, it's great to hear about the kind of different things that actually inspire you to get into the tech. Is there any follow-up questions from you, Irina? To learn more about that?
I just have a comment, not a question, but just a comment that it's actually so amazing that it feels like we all have this drive to create stuff or to improve stuff or to bring some value. This mindset of bringing value, I think it's so important. And we all kind of do the same thing. So it's so cool that we all with the same mindset to bring the value. And I think UX is so crucial. Anika, I'm totally on your side. Visual clarity and this magic, this complicated magic, which makes things look simple. Yeah.
Exactly.
Amazing. Amazing. I think that leads us into Josephine's question too. So you asked, what's the biggest thing that you've learned from a challenge that you faced in your career? And did it change the perception of what a good leader is? Tell me a little bit about where that question comes from.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this recently, like these kind of aha moments that you get from time to time, where you either overcome a challenge or resolve a situation. And it doesn't only resolve that specific situation, but it also, it kind of, you land in something within yourself that creates like a better baseline of who you are and where you want to go in your career and all. So I was curious about if you guys have any such similar situations or something that you have faced.
Yeah. Do you want to start yourself or otherwise I have something?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Something came to mind that really was an eye opener for me. I was a consultant at IT consultant company, and I just felt like it was hard to get a good dialogue with people. You sent these emails, you requested things, and it was slow. They didn't do what you wanted them to do. And I was like, why is this not happening? Why don't we have a good cooperation? And I talked to my boss at the time and explained the problem that I thought, why is everything so slow? They don't do what I want them to do. And she was like, you know, Annika, I always like to walk over to people and talk to them first and like have this eye to eye contact with someone, it always like makes things better. And I was like, yeah, she's not modern. She doesn't send emails like you should. It's much faster to send emails like, well, she's old. She doesn't know. But I was like, yeah, I'm going to give it a go, even if she's wrong. Then I did that. I walked over to the developer that I was working with and just like, yeah, hello. We haven't talked, but I'm this person. You know, I sent you an email about this. What do you think? And it just got so much better, like instantly. This person like smiled at me and like, yeah, nice. Do you want to have a coffee and talk about it? And this has been such a good thing in my life after this. And I think back on this, that it really, really helped me like to walk over to someone and just like take the first step to a personal contact and just say, yeah, have that like smile and say, hey, I want to talk to you. It is magical, I think. So that was, I have changed my ways after that.
Yeah, that is so true. I recognize that a lot. People tend to help people and rely more on relations rather than processes, especially when people are stressed and there's a lot to do. Then, yeah, it's easier to help out if you feel like you're helping an actual person and not just replying to some strange email you got from somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's definitely, yeah. I see that a lot in my work as well. And sometimes we get the best progress in things when the developers talk to each other rather than like management coming in and telling like, yeah, this needs to be prioritized right now and we need to follow these steps. And sometimes it's the only thing that you really need is for two individuals to speak to each other for 10 or 15 minutes just to resolve it. It doesn't have to be that big of a deal.
Mm.
So I think that's a great learning.
Thanks.
I'm so agree here. Like I'm just actively sitting and waving my head back and forth because it's very interesting to highlight that. Like I am, how to say, as a control freak, I'm a very organized person. It helps me deal with my own anxiety in a way. So that is why I'm pissed off. Like I see if my team is struggling and try to create like better workflows, optimized way, like just to make them more happy. But the thing is, which I learned in Sweden, that when I come here, so a little bit East European in a way, in a way to deal, because I had my own team and I already had my some settled frameworks or like workflows, and it was like more in comparison to Sweden, maybe more like less democratic in a way, like more we say what to do, we do, and we follow that one. When I come to Sweden, I was hit by reality that people have so many opinions, and I'm like, why we sit and discuss stuff? I was so annoyed. I'm like, oh, we have too much opinion. Why we sit and discuss? And I was so blind in this way that I'm like, hey, but I have the best workflows for you. Trust me, if you just will follow them, you will be them happy. Let's just stop, sit and discuss stuff. But then with the time, I learned to be the active listener. And I like completely agree with Annika's story when I just come to people, hear them, and they hear me. And we kind of like in this personal contact where they actually, you don't force them to do workflows. Sometimes you realize as also Josephine told that you can prioritize however you want, but sometimes you need to be so flexible because people are so different and you just need to adjust and create this positive dynamic. And this changed me completely because I was so like stubborn in my like, hey, I have best everything for you, just do that. But we work with the humans, and when you act like actively listen, understand their pain points, like we understand our users' pain points, same we understand our team pain points, and try to navigate through and create this healthy dynamic, it does really magic. It really changed also my leadership perspective as well.
Interesting. But I guess you're really, it's really good to be efficient too. In my opinion, it's always good to have that you have a plan. You have something to start with instead of just saying, what do you want to do? That can be
absolutely
unproductive as well. It's always good to have a plan and then being able to adjust it.
Yeah. I love my favorite place. I have a plan. My favorite phrase is like, I have plan for the plan.
Yeah.
We start from something and we try to adjust on the way. We have plan B. We are ready. If something will go wrong, we know what we will do. We have some protocols. Yeah. So again, maybe it's for you to deal with anxiety. Who knows?
Yeah, I feel that as well, Irina. It's a common thing where I have to plan for the plan and then plan for the plan if the plan doesn't work as well. So I, even in completely different industries and personal life, I still do this. I have to-do lists as long as my arm, where it's just planning all the time. So I completely get that. Josephine, what's the kind of the biggest thing that you've learned from a challenge as well?
Well, I think we have covered some of the topics already. I recognize myself in so many of it, but I think something that also comes maybe from the same root cause is the value of quick feedback loops. We've talked a lot about communication and all now, but getting feedback often on like smaller scopes to ensure that we are putting efforts early in order to fix or adjust for mistakes or misunderstandings. I think that's super important as well. Something that is kind of easy to overlook, even though it's such a simple thing that just should work really within a team or within collaboration in between teams as well. I think that is something that we need to keep reminding ourselves of, whether it's like a big project or a big initiative that you need to follow from like start to end, or if it's just the day-to-day work and collaborating together with your colleagues, just to follow up with each other. Like, are we still on the same page, or did it happen anything in between here that changed your perception of where we are going? It's so much easier to fix it like in smaller scopes and increments rather than getting all of the feedback at the end when everything is done and finished and it turns out that, oh, we built or we fixed something that was not really what the customer needed or what the users could really benefit from.
I agree totally.
Sometimes we stress too much. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a player sync that we added recently. Like, we are quite a new team with all the competences of players. And then it was a bit hard. Our players are in many different places, like in the news, in kids service, and in the interactive app as well. So instead of like just checking with everyone at like random intervals, we decided let's have a player sync every Thursday at the same time. Really, like, it's always there and you can come if you have something to say or something to ask, and everyone gets the same information at the same time, so we know what's going on with the players. And it's been really good. I think it's very, we try to keep it really short, like 15 minutes only, so we just like, yeah, what are you doing, do you have any questions, and we shouldn't take up too much time. But people really come. I was a bit afraid that they wouldn't, but they are. And I hope that's a sign of that they feel it's useful. Yeah, so I really agree with you there, that the quick feedback loops are really, we catch the problems early before they get big.
Yeah. I also believe it's such a good way also to build the habit, because maybe not, we all so different people in a way, and someone like just by default, we like someone can just easily manage expectation of the team or whatever. Someone work better, like if he works in kind of isolation or whatever, not distracted. But if you build, it's so good to also build this habit to like a little bit exchange information, manage each other expectations. It's really, really nice and dynamic.
Yeah. And everyone always join conversations and discussions with like different backgrounds and bringing different experiences. So even if we are leaving that first meeting, agreeing that, yeah, we are on the same page, we want the same things, then when you start working on it, it tends to deviate.
Yeah.
Maybe not a lot at the first, but at the end of it, those small deviations has just grown and grown, and we are far from each other suddenly.
Yeah.
I think it's really important.
Absolutely.
Amazing. And I think we've got a slightly kind of related question, but more geared towards kind of failures and things that you've learned from them. So, Anika, we're going to talk about epic fails, as you said before. What useful lessons have you learned from failing during the start of your career?
Yeah.
Give me a bit of context behind this.
Yes, this was my first real job. I was a product manager at a PR firm who did overhead images. They don't exist anymore. It was before PowerPoint. So we did like a physical PowerPoint. And I was kind of the concept developer doing series of presentations, for example, for Volvo when they went around and did their roadshow around the world. It was quite like big presentations, big, very like high profile presentations. And I had my first customer there. I was a bit shaky because it was really, I didn't handle money before this. I had to write tenders and like handle how much would it cost and like make sure people paid. And it was scary. And I had this customer that was, they were really nice. They were really a nonprofit organization. And I was like, this will be fun. This will be a good project. So I like gave them a proposal and they said yes. And we like got to work. We did some images for them. And I'd like, we're going to present them now. We are such a good team together. And I showed them and they were like, we don't like this at all. We want you to do it totally differently. You didn't listen to us and please redo this. And I was like, ooh, all my hours are gone almost. Why didn't I think of this? That they might not be pleased. And we didn't have any like writings in the contract about this. So I had to do like, sort of steal these hours and do it. The project just got more and more, minus. And they wanted me to redo it like 5 or 6 times. They were absolutely horrible customers. But what I learned from that was that be nice, but be aware of risks. That things can go wrong. You have to think about that beforehand and take sort of precautions that what happens if you have changes? What happens if you're not pleased? How many changes can you do and what will they cost? So not to be too gullible or naive when you work with people, when money is involved, just to like be prepared and think about the different scenarios that can come up. And I often think about that situation that, you have to be aware of risks and know what you will do if they happen. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Nice. And what are your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, I think I really agree with this. I actually had a useful lesson, but kind of on the opposite side. I think the risks are so important to be aware of, but perhaps this relates more to my personality, that I've learned that I kind of tend to overestimate the impact or consequence of failing or taking the wrong decision or however you want to phrase it, compared to the consequence of not being brave enough to make a decision at all or to act at all in a question. I think on the other hand, if you're a cautious person by nature, that we also need to learn to be brave enough to actually make decisions. And I believe that kind of as long as your intentions are good and that when you're humble enough to be quick to admit when you've made a mistake or when you feel like it ended up in the wrong place and not as you intended from the beginning, people will rarely hold it against you. They will be kind of understanding. And if you're in a nice working environment, they will understand that you came from a good place and you did your best for your product or for your team. So I think that is something that I have brought with me from my 5 years so far, that I think I can afford to be a little bit more brave in many situations because the consequences are rarely that crucial or it won't bring the full company and world down if I make a mistake, as long as I have estimated and tried to mitigate the risk beforehand. I think we have probably covered kind of both bases there. You need to be aware of the risks, but you also need to be brave enough in the end to actually act eventually.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think I can add from my side kind of comment, which maybe cover both both sides. So it's I think I consider my biggest value is maybe my game dev studio, which I had for 8 years. And yes, war started, but I kind of decided to move on. But the thing is that I understood that really good, maybe I'm a good product manager, but maybe I'm bad biz dev in a way of scaling big, because I always was in this constant fight between I take risk and I manage risk when I need to take risk and when I like predict everything, because salaries needs to be paid every month. At the end of every month, you need to cash out a lot of stuff and you need to pray that you calculated everything correctly and you predict some delay from the customer or whatever. So it's it's such a dance between I take risk because business needs to be developed. Without it, it's kind of almost like will not happen, but you always also need to be so cautious about how you do that. So I think, but I learned so much. I learned so much through these years, and it helped me to have business view side and doer view side in a way. So yeah, it teach me a lot, but I completely agree that this is such a balance which you play with the risk. And yeah. At the same time, just something to take a note on the very early stage of the career when I just was a developer. I just want to mention this moment, which also Josephine mentioned, when you have this aha moment and challenge and maybe some failure. I think most young engineers or maybe not even engineers, but I will tell from my perspective, when you start working and you you learn you do your piece of work step by step, you develop your level, and at some point you come to the task which looks impossible and you're like, it's impossible to do, it's impossible, I don't know. But this moment is your point of growth. You can give up or you can actually go through some tears and through some nights on the Stack Overflow, whatever, and just push it through. And now you build this habit to push through impossible. So, and then you, at some point, you again will hit this wall, this impossible wall, but then you again overcome. And this may become to businesses and to the products and to the everything. It's maybe it's good to take risk to try to overcome this challenge, because I really like to think that we have failure by default. So we have failure by default. It's our 0 point. If we will try, we have a little bit more. We have plus little bit or super success. I don't know. But if we will not try, we will still be in this 0 point, in this failure. So it's maybe good time.
But did you fail epically at some point that you sort of, this went really badly?
Well, I think my brain is my brain a little bit helped me with that. It's my brain erased all negative stuff. And I remember only positives. But we lost clients. There was so many of this stuff when we lost client, when we didn't deliver because of some bad communication or from his side or from my side, or when we failed with communication or with invoices or whatever. Always flight or fight, but it teaches you always so many things. After all this lesson, you're okay, now we improve our contract, now we communicate this and that. So
I really what you said about when just to sort of try again, and when you really fail, I don't know this. Well, you learn more and you sort of go that extra mile to do that instead of just, I can't do this. But not to accept that just like that, but to say, maybe I should try harder. Maybe I'm not a bad person, but I need to try harder and learn more before I can do it.
Or differently. Yeah, try differently.
Yeah, try a different way. Maybe it's doable, but not this way. Maybe I need to ask someone, or maybe I need to seek help to do this. Maybe I can't do it on my own.
Yeah. Took the words right out my mouth, Anika. I was just about to say, sometimes it's good to always ask other people, because you everyone has their own limited knowledge, but someone else knows somewhere, whether that's kind of reading up on stuff or asking one of your colleagues. I think it's definitely a good tip for anyone listening. Sorry, I completely spoke then, and I think Josephine and Irina, you both about to speak.
No, I just had a similar reference to like trying different things. I had a manager once referring like your learnings to a map where you, even if you don't find the right path at the first attempt, at least you can cross off on the map that, okay, but it wasn't this way. So now we have all these other options to try. So you learned something, even if it didn't really bring you forward. It can feel like that, but you know that you have at least limited the different options where you can move ahead from there. Mm-hmm. So I think that was something nice to keep in mind when you feel a bit overwhelmed with how to proceed with something, that, yeah, but at least try. You will learn something from it. If you don't try at all, then you will only be stuck wherever you are right now.
Process of elimination. I like it.
I really also like this this point about to like ask for help or to speak out, because for me it was such a discover in a way. Also in Sweden is full of discovery for me, to be honest. It's like also completely new piece of life. But because when you own a studio, you are like, you are, everyone asks you, and you're like, I don't have anyone to ask. So like I kind of try to deal with myself. I try to don't show that I don't know something, or like try to help everyone how much I can. And but when I start working in the company, and I always work with the boys, always like Irina and boys. So like I didn't have this also like woman team in a way. And I didn't know how crucial it was for my heart. It's maybe sounds silly or something, I don't know, but it was so crucial to actually, and here in Die Doctor, we had such an amazing this woman team where I actually learned how to ask for help, how to address questions, and it just completely changed, like blow up my perception of how much faster we can go if you go together, or like much more efficient. And because I always try to share something with someone, always try to help, but I never ask for help by myself. So, and it's so important if someone also have these struggles, I think it's good to a little bit rethink and try to do a step in this direction, and believe in people.
Believing that people have good intentions, and to have the courage yourself to like be transparent with, I don't know this, I'm not an expert in this, can you please guide me, can you please coach me on how to improve? Because then next time you will know more. I think that's been a good learning from my career as well, that you kind of have this perception that everyone around you are so competent, they have so much knowledge, everyone else are so good and experts in their fields. And you tend to underestimate your own knowledge or overestimate the people around you. And I think that's been clear for me, that no one knows everything. It's when you are combining the knowledge from different people, that's when you actually succeed as a team. But in order to do that, we need to understand what do people know. then we need to be that transparent and have the courage to say that this is where I need help, and you over there, you can help me with that, and together we can accomplish something. I think that's it takes some courage.
I don't know if we should take another question, but I had a reflection more, that I feel like before, I worked for a long time in tech, like 25 years, and I always like thought like I have to be very strong, I have to know everything, I have to be like a book that people can come to and ask about things, and I try to like always have plans. But then I noticed that people get really passive when you always have plans and we always know everything. But it was, so I tried to sort of not always be so active and so perfect and say like, oh, I don't know that, or what do you think? Or maybe say, maybe you can book that meeting. If you had a good idea, maybe you can sort of drive that. And it was, this has been a really good development in my team. I talked to you about that yesterday, Georgia, that people can really surprise you when you give them some like extra space and something good to do, that they can sort of really be much more motivated and active. And I was not prepared for that. It was really, it was a big change. And I think I was sort of the blocker. It is really hard to say that after, because I thought, oh, they are so passive. They are not, they're not doing things. I was actually hindering them by always being so quick to decide and like arrange things for them. So I think you also have to let go sometimes.
Yeah. And that's also courage and trust. Yeah. Showing trust in your colleagues and allowing them to take up the space.
Yeah, but it's hard because some people interpret that as weakness and like, oh, do you know, can't you book the meeting? Why don't you know this? You should know this because you are experienced. But it's not about knowing or not knowing. It's also about like spreading, delegating and letting other people take space in a room.
I think it definitely helps as well on that track. It's like giving them that little bit of ownership of what they're working on too. People often tend to, yeah, take a bit more pride in that when they're solely responsible for a certain task, don't they? So that's probably when you see people flourish.
Yeah, I think so.
Amazing. Very, very insightful discussion there. And it'll, yeah, lots of tips and tricks for people to use in their own work there. And Anika, I have one last follow-up question, I believe, from you, which is quite an interesting one. What does a fulfilling day at work look like for you? Tell me why you'd want to ask this and a bit of context behind it.
Yeah, I think we are interviewing people now for a position, and it's a question I like to ask others because I think it says a lot of about a person when they can just think about an ideal day. You can see sort of their what they focus on is really something that tells you something about how they are and what they care about. It's a good like opener of conversations, I think. So that's why I chose it.
Amazing.
So yeah.
And what does a fulfilling day look like at work for you, Anika?
Mm-hmm. I'm a very curious person, as I said from the beginning. So a good day, a fulfilling day at work is a day when I learn something. When we solve the problem. Like I come to work, we have a tricky problem that is like, we've been working on this for a long time. Will we ever solve it? And then maybe you call in a person that we didn't talk to before. They give us this last crucial part of information that we need. We solve the problem. It works. Everyone's happy. That is a good day for me. Like solving a problem together that was really tricky to do. So you feel you can get forward. You can get something out that was broken. That is really like it helps every day. But other than that, I really like doing different things, like not sitting in a lot of meetings. Maybe I'm going outside in an environment I haven't been in before, like a tour of a new place, for example, like a guided, like a new environment that I haven't seen before, talking to different kind of people with different kind of skills. So really a varied day as well. So sorry about rambling now, but I also feel that I have those days. Like I had one of these days last week where we had like four difficult bugs and we solved them. I must tell you about this one. Mello, the show Melodifestivalen, we had some problems with Chromecast crashing during one of the episodes. We didn't know why. We saw it in the statistics. And it was like, we sat together with some people who did live broadcasting and an analyst and us and just studied the logs and was like, what's happening here? Why do the crashes come when Marcus and Martinus are mentioned in the show? Are they sort of messing with this in a way? It turned out that the sign between their names, the ampersand sign, it wasn't interpreted in the right way in the live subtitles. So that was a problem for Chromecast and it crashed. So whenever people mentioned them, things got worse. So that's when we saw that bug that I think we've had for like 6 years and we didn't know about it until then. And that was like, ooh, that was a super cool day, I think.
Nice. Yeah, so. What are your thoughts, Irina? What does a fulfilling day look like at work for you?
Yeah, I think I have some kind of, I don't know, it's of course not diagnosed by my boyfriend always referring to that, but I have some ADHD or something. I like to change. And I also like to change. I kind of feel stuck if I like it's full focus day or to just meeting day. I really like when I really like time box my day. So I really like when I have a little bit of like meeting, when I solve some stuff, when I know that everyone have everything just to check up or like to kick off something that important to kick off. So like we discuss everything, we're all on the same page. Cool. And then I, with all this perfect information where we all perfectly align, see and create my all perfect roadmaps, and I actually create now perfect grid plan, understood where it needs to be done, or like we have some, and at the end of the day, of course, we have some release with some already big stuff or new feature. Perfect day for me.
Yes. I love that. I'm exactly moving, the same. Different
moving. Yeah. Mm. Of course, not every day like that. There's a lot of routine stuff and etc. But it's just when things are moving, it brings you energy and you feel that you bring value and you feel that like team brings value and you feel that it all makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I agree completely.
I love that. Yeah, I'm along the same lines of borderline ADHD and have to have loads of different change and stuff to keep me focused. But I guess speaking to people like yourselves, it helps because I speak to so many people all the time. So yeah, definitely, I feel that. And Josephine, last but not least, do you want to tell us what this looks like for you?
Yeah, I just can only agree with that feeling of like being forward leaning and having progress. I think that's really important for me as well. I enjoy having like a combination of meetings and offline working time. And to reach this kind of balance between focusing on the present challenges and resolving this kind of fixes where you get like the quick release of energy from something, but also having the time to look ahead, visualize and plan and work on improvements for the future, either for the team or for the product. I think I've in periods of times during my career, I've had phases where that time has been very less and it's been really fast paced kind of all the time, and you're feeling like you're putting out fires here and there, and it's always a lot of energy being released for the quick fixes and the quick resolutions, but your mind is always you're always feeling like you might be missing something or you might not be prepared enough for the next thing that will come ahead. So I think that's something I've realized is really important for me, to create that kind of space where you also reflect on what did work well, what are we doing that we need to continue with? Is there anything that we need to drop and stop doing? Can we do things in a different way so that we don't get stuck in this quick pace where we're just releasing things and quick resolutions, quick fixes? Because it's high energy in that phase when you have that kind of spirit, because it will usually be the same for everyone in the team as well, and you feel like you are on top of things, and you're working together, and you get things out quickly, and things are improving, but it's only improving here and now, and not for a period of time in the future. So that's something I realized that time I need to create for myself, because it tends to disappear if you don't protect that time.
I know a guy who books meetings with himself just to not be booked with others.
Yeah,
same. I haven't done it myself, but does it work for you?
Yeah, it works for me. I think it's really useful. Then I definitely protect the time in my calendar to be able to spend that time with myself or with a few selected invites to share those reflections with me as well, but just to kind of lower the pace for a little while and land on where we are right now, so that we don't get stuck in this putting out fire mode, which is so easy to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Different kind of industry that I work in, but yeah, I do exactly the same as well, where I'll have a to-do list and I'll block out certain areas in my calendar where I need, even if it's just like a bit of admin and stuff like that. It really protects your time and helps you plan a lot better. Definitely.
I haven't really done that, and maybe I should start. I just take the like 5-10 minutes I have and try to do things there. But I have Fridays where we don't usually have a lot of meetings. So that's where I have my space to sort of do things that are more like slow, and I have time to reflect and maybe read in a book or do a course or something like that. We have Hack Fridays every other week still, which is such a luxury, where developers hack on things that they think is interesting. And sometimes I do too, but I mostly spend the time like learning stuff. Like reading stuff I haven't had time to read and stuff like that.
Nice. Amazing.
Every Wednesday we have like a meeting free day, or like we try to have. Of course, it's something urgent, we like, of course, do that. But we call it Zen Day, like Zen Day. So it's kind of we try to shuffle around meetings in a way so all people, including like all developers and all like managers, everyone have like just one day without meetings, or almost without meetings.
Exactly. But I think it's a really good idea, like a meeting. I'm gonna call it my Friday the Sunday as well.
Nice. I'm gonna take this back to my managers. I love that.
I have a proposal.
I'm gonna say, listen to this podcast episode. I love that. But no, it's been great to kind of discuss all of this with you all. I'd love to say thank you so much to our guests for sharing the thoughts. So just to recap, I've had Anika Bidner, who's a product owner at SVT Play, Irina Billis, who's senior product manager at Diet Doctor, Josephine Person, who is a team manager at TF2 Every Banking, currently working with Lanceforce Springer. If you're hiring for new technical roles or even looking for a new role, feel free to get in touch with us here at Evolution. Or if you or anyone you know would like to be featured in a future podcast, just drop me a message too. I'm Georgia Benton. You can find me on LinkedIn or even email me at georgia.benton@evolution-nordics.com, or even visit us at evolutionjobs.com/UK/Nordics. Thank you so much again to all of our guests, and thank you for listening. We hope you can join us next time.